another week of That Movie Show. Mike Wendt and Eddie McCabe taking you through this week of movie talk. Eddie, how are you doing this afternoon?
Oh, I am doing much better than yesterday.
Oh?
Yeah, well, so like yesterday was a wild.
Any day above ground is a fuck you.
Get out of here. Get out of here with that nonsense. Still feels like there's a light at the end of the tunnel as everything seems to be opening up. The news, I think I talked about it last week. Improv Asylum and Laugh Boston's going to be opening up. Yep. You can buy tickets now.
Awesome.
So do that so that I can go back to work and stop living in this weird, you know, hell apartment. So, you know, hopefully that happens. But yesterday, I actually kind of went to work. I went to work on an actual movie set for the first time in over a year. And it was like a very, very mixed bag, right? So you have been on a movie set since COVID.
Yeah, happened. When I was part of one of the first productions that got back to work at COVID. And I believe... I can get sued, but I believe my NDA is up. The trailer is out. I've seen other people that worked on the movie posting about it, and not like the stars, but like people who have, you know, people I know, like friends of mine who are working on it, post about it. So I think I can talk about it. So last September, I was cast in The Unholy. At the time, it was called Shrine. So The Unholy is
also
coming
up. I think the NDA only applies to like if you start talking about story beats.
I don't even know what the fucking story is.
Yeah, I think you can talk because, like, there's a thing with my story that, like, I can't say the title of it.
That's very exciting. Oh, really? You can't even talk? Oh, good thing you started that and not me because I was about to say
I realized when you started mentioning the NDA, it's like, oh, I better say that.
But I better work in what it is. Yeah, so The Unholy hits theaters, which is pretty exciting, Easter weekend. I believe the trailer says Good Friday. Waka Waka, The Unholy. Yeah. It's a religious movie. But it stars Jeffrey D. Morgan, Cary Elwes, William Sadler, Cary Elwes. And William Sadler. And hopefully me. You know, I've had a few people ask, oh, don't you get like an advance card? I'm like, come on. Come on now.
That's not how this works.
That's adorable. But yeah, so back in September, I got to work on the movie as an actor for a day, which was super exciting. And it was super, especially, it's one of those things that, you know, I've mentioned a few times. It's like in this year of COVID, it's good to have, you know, those happy moments, the moments to look forward to, the positive moments to talk about. And this was arguably one of the, if not the best day I've had in the last year, was working on this movie. And from start to finish, like, it was super cool because, like, I love the virtual audition process.
Okay.
You know, as a fellow actor, you've been to Boston casting many times.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not located in the most convenient of spots to, you know, park or drive to in Alston. And you usually get there and you spend, you know, a while waiting for your turn with a bunch of other people that look similar to you. And then you're in and out in about 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
And
auditioning
now,
just is terrible in general.
I'm not a huge fan. I save my best for the day.
Yeah, of course.
Which is not great to get a job, especially when you're not known. But the virtual audition is super cool because as it would seem, it's literally you doing it at your home. So I went through two rounds of auditions. The first one was with the casting agents. And then the next one was with the casting agents and the director. And it was awesome. And like, it was awesome because it felt good to be doing something, first of all.
Right.
It was really cool that they reached out to me. Like, I didn't, like, it wasn't like I got a notice. So I'm still kind of curious how they found me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's kind of how my story goes.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I got an email. And it wasn't like one of those casting notice emails. It was literally to me, hey, Mike, we want you to know if you want to audition for this part. And I'm like, fuck yeah, what else am I going to do? And they did it virtually. And then I would say like 3 or 4 days went by and nothing. And I'm like, I didn't get it. You know. And at the time it was when I had the longer beard and I was like, I haven't heard anything. All right. So I start trimming it up. And then the next day, like, oh, we loved your look and we want you to audition again with the director. I'm like, God damn it. I can always grow it back. Can't be filming tomorrow. So I did it. And It was great. I love the whole process of it, especially the fact that you can just do it from here. The same way you and I are doing this show, I was able to audition for a movie. And then the next day, I got a text that I was cast in the role, which was awesome. And then you start researching what this movie actually is.
Yes.
And probably one of the most exciting things about it is that it's produced by Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert, who created The Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a horror movie. So I'm in a horror movie. Well, I have to see it. But yeah, I acted in a horror movie produced by the creators of The Evil Dead. So that is one of the coolest like notches on my belt. You know what I mean?
Of course.
It's super fucking cool. And then just, the whole experience of the day. It was the first week getting back, like productions were getting back. If you remember back at that time, there was a lot of celebrity COVID cases. Right. And it was kind of being touted as like, yo, anybody can get it. That was what everybody was trying to say. Meanwhile, I'm just like, oh no, everyone's just going back to work. And they had to take a COVID test and realized, oh shit, I was asymptomatic this whole time.
Yeah, you know what
I
mean? Right.
I think like the big ones that I saw were like The Rock got it. And
Tom Hanks.
Well, he was one of the first ones ever. Yeah. He was the poster child for COVID, basically. Kevin Nash got it, and he was going back to working on a movie. The people I follow on Instagram, basically, wrestlers. So it was getting back to that, and it was super fun and super cool, and the whole process of it, and you know, I had a fucking trailer, which it wasn't an exciting trailer. It was a glorified closet. But it was still mine. It had my name on the fucking door.
Yes. You know what I mean? That's all that matters.
And you're as someone somebody who has spent, you know, my whole acting career in the background and holding tents, fucking waiting to be used as an extra, this was super cool.
Right.
I don't want to talk about the scene I was in because, again, I don't know the legalities of it. And also, go see the movie. Please, go see the movie. Yeah, but, and also, that was, like, the acting was cool, but the cool stuff for me was the little shit. Like, walking on set and every single person knowing my name.
Yeah.
Because I was, because on the shoot, on that day, I was one of two actors. So there was only two of us. And I was one of them. So everyone coming up was like, oh, Mike, how you doing, Mike? And Mike, and they just kept. And now, granted, when I was sitting in my trailer getting dressed, I could overhear them talking outside, and they had fucking photos of us. You know, they knew who they were looking for. But still, it was a nice thing.
My first commercial ever, right? So I'm like 6 years old. I'm working on two Lucky Charms commercials, and it was a SAG gig, right?
Right.
I was also, because as you can imagine, this Lucky Charms commercial, I'm the only actor. Right. There's no other kids. It's just me. Right. So I had my own personal PA, basically.
I had one of those too.
Right. I had my own personal PA.
You were six. I'm 41.
Yeah. I didn't know how to handle it. I had no idea what was happening. And I just had this dude kept coming up to me being like, hey, man, like, you need anything? Like, you need anything? You need anything? And I'll never forget. I just remember being like, I mean, like, because, you know, it's long. It's like long days and stuff. Yep. And I was like hungry. I was like, I get like a grilled cheese. He was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And went and got me a grilled cheese.
So I had one as well. And same exact thing. She'd come up, knock on the door about every 20 minutes. You doing okay? You need anything? You need anything? And I'm just like, and see, I came prepared. Cause again, it's COVID. So I didn't know what was going to be going on. I assumed that, rightfully so, catering was going to be completely different. Cause you can't just have people milling around, you know, touching food and all that stuff. So I came prepared. I had a cooler with my own water and shit in it. But after like the fourth or fifth knock on the door, everything okay? You doing all right? I'm like, all right. Can I have some water? Yeah. And the fucking thing was right by the stairs. So she's just like, here you go. It's all right here. I'm like, all right. I'm good.
Thanks.
Thanks. You know? But it was fun. It was just fucking fun. The interactions I had with the director were awesome. It was, again, I've on all these, you know, real movie sets, I've always been an extra. So you're very much you're herded in and you're herded out. You're
it's much more fun when you're what I like to call real people.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, that's
I was asked my fucking opinion of things.
Right.
And I'm like, and I'm, and again, like when you're an extra, there's a lot of unwritten rules, especially about where you can go. And that's pre-COVID. You know, right. You're supposed to basically stay in holding in the tent with the rest of the extras.
Yeah. You're basically a glorified prop is really, really what an extra is.
100%. And you can have as much fun or as little fun as you want with that. I choose to have some fun with it, but
yeah,
you know, it just passes the time. It keeps your brain active instead of just going into Jell-O mode. But
right
in this, like, I was able to wander around and I'm walking by and I see the, you know, the storyboard thing and I'm just looking and I'm like, because this was one of the first real actor experiences on a set, I was half waiting for someone to be like, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing over here?" But everybody walking up, be like, "Need anything?" I'm like, "No." They're like, "Okay, cool." And I'm just like, you know, the they had a giant like crane fucking thing. And again, you and I also come from the technical background of things, so all the geek shit was just firing on all cylinders. Yeah. I'm like, "Look at that crane," you know. And then stuff like, I got to pick my character's props.
Oh, that's always fun.
You know, so they, I went over to the prop department and it was like, all I remember is there was a, in one of the Blu-rays for the Star Wars prequels, there's a moment in a documentary where George Lucas comes over to Samuel L. Jackson and he has this chest and he opens up the chest and there's six lightsabers in there and Sam Jackson gets to pick his lightsaber that he's going to now use as Mace Windu. And it wasn't as glamorous as that.
No, but you felt like it.
But I'm like, this, I get to choose this. I get to pick which one. Like, nobody's telling me you have to hold this hammer. It's like, I'm going to pick this one here. I like this one. I like how this feels. I like how this looks. And I'm like, this is my character now. And it's like little shit like that, you know, going through it, you know, the acting was the acting. And without talking about the scene, again, it's, for me, it was a little shit. Like, as soon as it was over, the first thing the director did was come straight over and thank me and say, "Oh," and I'm just like, that's really sorry. I got to get shitty for a minute.
Sure.
When you put in the work and you're thanked for it afterwards, it's really nice and you appreciate it. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, 100%.
Like,
there's a right way and a wrong way to do this business. Like, 100%. And, you know, people that work on a small scale hide behind their budgets sometimes. And I know what you're referencing, and I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about, like, short films in general, independent features, things like that.
Sure.
Where it's like, hey, man, like, I know you have no money, but you have no money doesn't mean that you can't be grateful. You can't be,
you almost need to be more in that situation. Like, that's how I look at it. Like I was being paid very well to work on this movie.
You got paid, like, to do a job.
Yeah. And I did it. And it was he was just so kind. And he came straight out and was thankful. He's like, "Thank you for doing this thing." And I'm like, "Thank you, man. Like, thank you. Yeah. You got me out of the house today." You know, that's fucking, thank you for that. First of all, you got me out of the house during COVID this year. So that's fucking awesome. But yeah, it was a big thank you fest. It was a big fucking love fest.
Sure.
But yeah, so it's like, if I always felt like if you're on a smaller budget where you're not able to pay people as much as, you know, as much as they're worth or as much as they deserve, et cetera, whatever that means, definitely at least thank them. Be appreciative, because they're doing it for you. And especially if you're doing it on a lower budget, they're really doing it for you.
Yes.
You know, 100%. They're helping you in so many more ways. So just
try to be
a human being. But and he absolutely was. It was awesome. It was an awesome experience. And I really hope I didn't get cut out.
Yeah. We always do.
So Easter weekend, please go see The Unholy in theaters safely.
I'll reactivate my AMC A-list for it.
Yeah.
No.
They're not out of business yet?
No.
Did that stock thing really save them?
I think so. I got stock in it. I keep making money.
Reddit.
I keep making money off of it.
Really? So you're actually doing well with it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You.
So
now your story.
My story. So I worked on my NDAs are definitely active. And so there are a lot of things that I can't talk about. But I'm going to do my best
apparently the title, so I'm just gonna shut my fucking mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, here's the thing. everybody's going to watch this when it happens.
Yep.
Everybody's going to watch it when it happens. And there are two major plot points that were kind of like, not necessarily revealed while I was there, but were like opened and discussed while I was working yesterday. I got hired as a stand-in. Mm-hmm. And so my character is ancillary. It doesn't, you know, he's just a part of the thing. He's not like a main character or anything like that. But basically what that means is that I'm a part of what's called the second unit, right? Mm-hmm. So when
I had a stand-in too. That's the other thing.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know I had a stand-in until I realized I had a stand-in. I was literally, okay, so we'll finish yours in a second. So I'm walking to set and I'm walking over and there was three different costume choices we went through. The one they picked, I was so happy they picked it because the other two were very sexy and this wasn't a sexy role. Like,
yeah,
sure. But I'm walking to set and there's a guy in one of the sexy outfits.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh shit, maybe there's more of us in this scene. And he's kind of waving to me as I'm walking over and he's like kind of waving me over. I'm like, all right. I'm like, and I come over. He's like, hey, have they told you what you're doing? And I'm like, kind of, who are you? He's like, oh, I'm your stand-in. I'm like, I have a fucking stand. And yeah, he was like a model. Like he had beautifully coiffed hair and fucking, sure, he was about 70 pounds lighter than me. And I'm just like, ah,
yeah,
you want to just do this? And I could say I'm you. Yeah, like, right. Can I CG my face onto this guy's abs? Like, Jesus Christ.
Right.
If I looked like him, I would have had the sexy costume.
Yeah, of course.
But again, that was those little cool moments. Like I had a stand-in. Like,
right. So basically what a stand-in does is it's somebody that vaguely fits your description, right? Vaguely. They're usually the same height, around the same build,
yeah,
you know? And so that way they step in while the stars basically step out and do a number of things. When you're actually like in that level of a movie, like people think it's just like, oh, I'll be in my trailer and they just like go and play Nintendo or something. And I promise you that that's not what happens. Like, you not know, yeah, not every day sometimes, but it's just like, you know, when The Rock steps off, and The Rock is not in this thing, but when The Rock steps off, he has stuff he's doing, right? Huh. Like he's remembering lines for the rest of the day that he has to remember.
He's
like,
got tequila and energy drink companies.
Yeah, he's got tequila, energy drinks. He's trying to buy the XFL.
He's got to go exercise.
Yeah, he's got to go exercise. So this person comes in while they're tweaking the lights, right? While they're making sure that the lighting is accurate and everything looks good, they need somebody to stand in there. So instead of wasting this actor's time, they basically just hire somebody to just basically stand there and basically be a life-size cutout of this person that can do the not even necessarily do the dialogue, but like go through the blocking where it's like you have to walk from the door to the bar, from the bar to the jukebox, and then sit down at this table. You know what I mean? And you basically do that and they're like, oh, there's a weird shadow here, and they tweak and you do it again, right? So that's what I got hired to do. Mm-hmm. Not super glamorous. I'm never, you know, not.
And but again, if there is dialogue, sometimes for sound purposes, the stand-in will do it. I know on the Sasquatch commercial I did, I worked with the kid who was a stand-in for Ryan Reynolds on that the movie that hasn't come out yet.
Free Guy.
And he was telling me about it. And he's like, yeah, and like I learned all the dialogue. And I haven't done stand-in work. And I always, you know, like I said, I always thought I was just stand there and get lit. And not the kid's version of lit, but actually lighting. But I'm like, oh, really? You learned the dialogue? He goes, oh, yeah, because it was audio and stuff like that. And I guess, like, he did such a good fucking job that, like, Ryan is bringing him on his next projects and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's also that aspect. You want to do your job, even if your job is that.
I had lines. Mm-hmm. And so same thing, the beginning of the day, I'm handed sides. Sides are the script. It's the script, but it's not like the whole script. It's just what we're doing today. Right. So there were three scenes that we were doing. So I got a little packet and it's all the scenes that we were doing that day.
Right.
And, it was a ton of fun. You know, it was good to be out on a movie set again. It's been so long since I've been there. But it was also at the same time absolutely miserable because we were in a very remote cabin in the middle of the woods in northern Massachusetts, and
yesterday,
it was yesterday, which was 18 to 12 degrees. It was 18 to 12 degrees, somewhere in that range all day. And like, when I tell, like, they had, when it was really nice, like a few days ago, and it was like 70 degrees, which awful, that it wasn't that day. There's no roads, you know? So like I was telling you off the air that the base camp, like where everything like starts and emanates from, was 0.6 miles away, so a little over half a mile away from where the actual set was. Mm-hmm. And so we had to trek a whole while to get there, and then we were there. I mean, it was a 13-hour day. These things, you know, especially this is a TV show, so we got to get it done, right? Like, we got to get it done.
Right.
This is the day we're doing it, and so come hell or high water, we're going to keep going till we don't got no more sunlight. You know right. what I mean? But it was very fun. It was really cool. 13 hours. I started at 5 o'clock in the morning and went past 6.
So you were chasing sunlight, basically.
Oh, we absolutely were.
See, I guess I had the advantage. Mine was a night shoot, so I didn't have to show up till like 2 in the afternoon and start my day, which was also nice because I live on the Cape and I'm not a morning person.
And like, I know what it takes because like we've been doing this on like very, you know, in the technical end and, you know, create projects and stuff like that. Sure. And we're definitely on the smaller end of things, I would say.
You and me?
Yeah. You know, but this is a huge production. And it's like, I feel so bad for some of these, like this crew, because they were operating on 4 cameras. Mm-hmm. And like, these are high end cameras with full departments, 2 to 3 people. I mean, actually, sorry, like 3 to 4 people, on every camera.
Per camera. Yeah.
You know, and then the grip department with it and the, you know, the makeup department and all these people, and they have to break all this stuff down, you know, like there
was, okay. So that was because when we finished our night, it was like my instincts almost kicked in. I'm like, you want me to help carry anything?
Yeah, right.
Because I'm used to what we do, and it's like, we are in a smaller, and we put up the lights, and we put, you know, microphone people and all that shit. So it's like, at the end, I was like, oh, do you want me to, you know, help with that or something like that, or you know.
The craziest part is that happened to me yesterday. So I can't, right? Because again, this is big time Hollywood thing, right? So everybody is union. Everybody
100%.
Is union.
Yeah.
And so it was like, there was a guy that it was a remote cabin, and then there was a porch, and they had a dolly on the porch where just one of the cameras was stationary, but they were getting the dolly off. And so they basically had to put 2 planks to like then wheel the dolly down. And they basically were like having a little bit of trouble, like getting it on and keeping it on. And there were like 2 or 3 people. And so I instinctively started to like go and help. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I got this.
I know what
like,
I'm doing. Yeah.
I know exactly what I'm doing. And then they were like, hey man, like you can't. And it's just like, oh yeah, that's right. I'm like, if one of the other actors,
you're
because I am in this
today.
Yeah, I'm talent today. But again, like if I'm in the Screen Actors Guild. Right. And so like if one of the other actors was, and like, look, I'm not saying that everybody's a narc and going to do this, right? But like if one of the other actors saw me helping them,
it would be a problem.
And then they told the union that I did that, it could get the project shut down. Right? And again, the likelihood of that happening is very little.
And you didn't do it. So there's
and
that.
I didn't. Yeah, and yeah. I didn't do it, but like that's like a real thing, sure, you know what I mean? And then same thing. I was standing next to the lens cart, and there was a guy who was just like, "Hey man, I need the 135," and I was just like, "Oh yeah, sure," and I just like started. And now again, this isn't like a $2,000 like, you know, Canon L series lens that you slap on the front of your little DSLR that you got. It was like, oh no, this is a Alexa Cinema Prime, like, you know, $20,000 lens. And I'm like, oh yeah, look, even if you knew that I knew that I was doing, I don't think you'd want me touching this.
Right.
So, you know, I got a couple more days on it. I know that I'm at least working one more day this week. Oh. But they're telling me that I'm hired for more. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. And, you know, eventually, here's the thing. The project has been announced. I know that. Right. But they're using a working title. They're using a working title. And so, you know, it's just better if I don't actually say what everything is.
Is it Huckleberry?
No, it's not Huckleberry. The working title is Marble.
That is extremely obscure.
Yeah.
So at least fucking The Mandalorian used Huckleberry. It's a Western term.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is Marble. Marble. I believe I know why.
It's called Marble?
Why it's called Marble.
Is that a plot point?
Yeah, I would think so.
It'll be a fun conversation to have when it comes out.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially because I have Showtime. So that'll be great. I can watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Awesome. Anything? Were we going to talk about anything else before we get to the movie?
No.
Okay.
I think ready? That was fun.
Blue Hawaii?
Yes. Yeah. We're going to talk about Blue Hawaii.
Night and you and blue Hawaii. The night is heavenly. Me. And you are heaven to me, Hawaiian sunset peeping from the sea.
Blue Hawaii, with Elvis as your personal guide to America's exotic Eden, our Polynesian paradise. Elvis brings you the vacation of your life in his first big musical since the sensational G.I. Blues.
It work. She's jealous.
As he hits the beach with the most luscious armful of delight on the islands.
Don't you like it?
Oh, I love it. And I thank you for thinking of me.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of you. I was thinking of me.
Yes, the most gorgeous Wahinis on Waikiki are taking lessons from Elvis when he gets a job guiding gals with more than scenery on their minds.
Let's go on a moonlight swim, far away from the crowd, all alone upon the beach.
Do you want to kiss me again?
I don't rob cradles.
Did you ever see anything like this in a cradle?
If I can falling in love with you, no more do I feel the touch of your hand on mine. Rock, a hula baby, rock, a hula baby, got a hula loose from your heart.
I'm gonna dance with Frenchie.
Excuse me, Mr. Garvey. Why can't we settle this?
Did I say move?
Chad, please.
Oh, go on. Turn him loose, sis. Turn that tiger loose.
Yeah. I'm a poor Hawaiian beach boy, a long way from the beach.
What we forgot to talk about.
So
tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, or it's dropping on the 17th, today is St. Patrick's Day, which means we're recording on March 16th. So I believe it's customary that we open up a Steve Weiser since it's Austin 316 day.
Sure.
Which, as I was doing that, realized, my God, the internet has now put two massive drinking holidays side by side.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have.
The 18th of March needs to be hangover day.
It does. It should be. It should just be whatever that 3-day chunk is.
Or hangover 3-day.
It should just be a 3-day holiday, right? So like it's like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this year. Boom. And then otherwise it's like, you know, we go Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Austin 316 day. Jesus. The things the internet does. Everybody's excited about National Pizza Day. I'm like, no, wait.
What a great character. Like we've talked about wrestling and everybody's like, oh, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin. But it's like, man, that guy as a character is just so iconic as like a full on television character. I don't think that they've ever flushed a wrestling character out the way that they have with that guy, because like the Undertaker's like spooky, scary and stuff. But like, you know, Austin or if was you're far to more
two guys watching wrestling miserable at the end of 1999 because his hip didn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I forgot how much he hated life then.
Yeah. Just had to take his ball and go home.
He literally was just showing up to work in sweats and bandanas. Like he was basically Mark Calloway going on strike on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. I would too.
The Undertaker's wrestling tonight. No, he isn't. He's sitting at commentary bitching about work.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I love Stone Cold. He's fantastic.
Yes. I've always, it's one of those things like, I've taken being that someone that's followed and watched wrestling literally my entire life. It's the oldest entertainment relationship I have. Sure. I always go back to I've been watching wrestling as long as I've known how to turn on a television set. Saturday and Sunday mornings with my grandfather watching Wrestling Challenge and Superstars. Yeah, that's how far back I go. You weren't born yet.
No, I wasn't.
But also fast forwarding to, you know, present day. And my last career as a TV personality that was going under his own name, I always put, I've heard Steve Austin say it multiple times in interviews, and I always had that in the back of my head, where he would always say, when people would ask him, what's the difference between Steve Austin, the guy, and Steve Austin, the television character? While his name really isn't Steve Austin, was one, but
yeah, right.
Nevertheless, he would always say he takes his own personality, he takes who he is, and when the red light goes on, he cranks it up to 11. And I'm like, that's always kind of been, because it's like, I show up on TV and I'm Mike Wendt. But, you know, I crank the volume up and I put on, and most of the time that volume is color in shirts.
Yeah. In the shirts weirdest
styles is what I got.
You know? What a weird thing. Guys, why do you look like you're going to put on a magic show in this bar?
We're eating off paper plates and $700 shirts. Whatever. We're assholes.
Very weird. It's a very weird, weird thing.
But
yeah.
I mean, something I took from him and applied to myself was you take your own personality and you just crank it up to 11 and hope people like it.
Well, and it also shows you, and it's something, and this is not a wrestling podcast, so we won't dive down this rabbit hole. But
you were on one, so plug it before we wrap up.
Oh yeah, I was. So go check out Wrestling Inside the Ropes on 98.5 The Sports Hub. I guest hosted with my former co-host of the New Age Insiders, Jason Maltov, or Chris now. it's a whole thing, just watch the show. But anyway, Sarge was not on there, so we were on there in place of him with Jimmy Stewart, and it was a ton of fun. But the thing with wrestling is that, you know, everything comes when you can connect a character, right? And you talk about this with movies, right? We're going to talk about Blue Hawaii. Yep. And it's a prime example of that, right? Where it's like, I'm invested in this character. I'm invested in what they're doing. So I care and I will watch the program. And few people did it better than Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes, 100%. So we ready to do it now?
Now we're ready to do Blue Hawaii.
All right, Blue Hawaii.
Please.
Blue Hawaii was released November 22nd, 1961. It had a box office of $4.2 million. At the time, that was a success. It was written by Hal Cantor. It was directed by Norman Turan. It starred Dame Angela Lansbury.
Yeah,
and a little known actor, Elvis Presley.
Yes.
I was so happy when you suggested this for a number of reasons. And one of them is I'm a massive Elvis fan.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even a little known fact that I am a massive Elvis fan. I mean, his birthday in January, his death day in August. I make peanut butter and banana sandwiches. I was happy as a pig in shit 2 years ago when Showcase released the 68 comeback special on the big screen. I was there for both showings of it. I own not all 33, but many of Elvis's movies on DVD. I'm an Elvis fan. I always have been. Again, going back to childhood, my dad introduced me to Elvis records, and he had a record player connected to a tape player. He made me tapes. I played those tapes till they bled. I remember the 68 comeback special, having that on VHS on multiple different copies because I wore them out. I watched it so much. Mm-hmm. I'm an Elvis fan, plain and simple. And as an Elvis fan, that's also a movie fan, I recognize that his movies are not great.
Yeah, sure.
But as an adult, I realize what they are as well. Elvis movies are a product of his manager, Colonel Tom Parker. And what they are is 2-hour music videos to sell the soundtrack to that, which if you know anything about Elvis's sound, the soundtracks went to number one, most of them. A number of years ago, they released Elvis's, they did two releases of Elvis's 30 number one hits. So all the songs that went to number one on the Billboard, they released on two different 30 disc CDs. And a lot of them were from movies, and I think like five of them were from this movie specifically.
Yeah, there were five or six that I remembered. I was like, oh, I know that song. Oh, yep. I know that song. And I assumed that one's blanking, right? The one he sings to the grandmother that I was just like, can't help falling in love with you. Right?
Yep.
And I was just like, oh, that definitely wasn't like made for this. Oh,
I mean, I would assume. I don't believe it was.
I don't think it was because I don't. I think it's a cover anyway.
Well, a lot of his songs were.
Yeah. Yes.
That's another thing. Like Elvis, a lot of his number one hits, a lot of his songs, period, were cover songs. But Elvis did them.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that somebody else, and there's a long history that we will not go down of Elvis stealing music from different cultures and whatnot. But
yes.
Even so, they became Elvis songs. The covers became 100%. Elvis songs. Elvis's covers of songs eclipsed the originals.
Yes.
So just for reference sake, he made 33 movies.
I didn't know that. I need to watch all of them.
The majority of them were made in the 60s and that was by design. Like I said, Colonel Tom Parker had a plan.
Yeah,
and it was turn this person into a brand more than an entertainer.
Yes.
And Elvis went into the army in 1958 and he got out in early 1960. And from 1960 till they made this movie, he made four. He made G.I. Blues. He made Flaming Star. He made Wild in the Country and Blue Hawaii in 1960 and 1961. He made four movies in 2 years. The other thing about him is I kind of just glossed over the writer and director because the scripts were very formulaic. Like G.I. Blues and Blue Hawaii are the same fucking movie. You know what I mean? It was basically you take Elvis Presley.
Yep.
And you can almost see it in a meeting. It's like, all right, is Elvis a soldier coming home or is he a race car driver in this one? All right, soldier coming home. Great. All right, so we got the soldier coming home. We got the girlfriend who's kind of playing hard to get, but in the end we'll get them together. There's got to be some kind of obstacle Elvis has to overcome, but not too big that we can have some fun with it. And every 2 to 4 minutes tops, we got to have a new musical number.
Yes.
Print money.
Oh, 100%.
And that's what they did. That's what they did. They printed money for about 10 years.
Yeah. So I suggested this movie on our last show because I knew you were a huge fan and I've never seen an Elvis Presley movie before.
Period.
Right? None of them. Right? Obviously know who Elvis is, heard Elvis, listened to Elvis. Obviously not as much as you, but every now and then it's just like, oh, it would be fun to put him on Spotify while I do the dishes.
Sure.
Because his music is easy to listen to.
Very snappy.
Very snappy, very, very fun and upbeat. And I'm not going to cry like when I listen to Ocean Avenue, an emo punk music. Sure. You're too old for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Anyway, and then I saw this on Paramount Plus that it was a movie that was available, and I was like, that's it. That's going to be my suggestion anyway. At some point, I'm going to keep suggesting it till we do it because I think you would enjoy it. And we're I hated Slapshots, and then I'm anticipating that we're going to hate the Snyder Cut, all 4.5 hours of it.
Not only the fact that, excuse me, still celebrating 316. Not only that we're going to hate the 4 hours of a Snyder Cut, but we decided, like, fucking dumbasses, to do both of them. So we're going to not, so all of you can thank us for sitting through over 6 hours of Justice League next week.
Yeah, that's true. So I was like, look, here's the thing. I assume that this is going to be, at the very least, campy fun, right? Elvis. It's going to be campy fun.
Yes.
I will tell you that I am very, very disappointed in one thing from Blue Hawaii. And that's that we never got that, like, 60s shot of somebody clearly in front of a screen surfing. Like, we didn't...
They did the car, though.
They did do the car. They did plenty of the car, and that was fine. But I wanted one of Elvis actually surfing. Elvis carried a surfboard. Elvis was laying down in the ocean on a surfboard, but he was never surfing. And I'm like, I feel robbed. I do feel robbed about that.
Yeah.
That being said, this is a damn near perfect movie. God, God damn it, I loved this movie. Oh, God. Is it bad? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's not good. It's not good. Is it a glorified music video, like, playlist? Yeah. Yes, definitely. Is Elvis the most captivating man on the planet? Probably.
Goddamn, his hair was perfect.
Like, this is the comparison that I'll give to you, right?
And the tan. Perfect tan. This was not an army man who just spent 2 years in Paris. This was a guy that's been living in Hawaii for a year.
Easily. So this is kind of what you needed to do and why it failed, because they didn't do this with someone like Hulk Hogan, right?
And I
talk about, like, I'm comparing Elvis and Hulk Hogan because they're both cultural icons that were cultural icons for something else, right?
Well, Elvis again, if you were in the 80s, Hulk Hogan was Elvis Presley.
Yeah, right.
A kid in the 80s, Hulk Hogan was fucking everywhere.
Right, but he was a wrestler, right? Sure. And so he didn't come up as an actor that you saw him in things, but but no, that's the point. Elvis is a musician that started doing acting stuff. And the point is that this movie leans into the fact that it's just like, oh, we're just going to let Elvis do charisma Elvis stuff. He's just going to sing, and we're just going to do that. And it's like, I bet you every single Hulk Hogan movie would have been a smash hit if at some point he just, like, looked at a character, we cut to a POV shot, and he just gave a promo to the person. Because we didn't do the Hulk Hogan stuff because he tried to actually be an actor.
Well, so what you're saying, and I agree 100%, they should have just churned out a shitload of No Holds Barred movies.
Yeah, but, like,
because that's Hulk playing Hulk, basically. Right. You know what I mean? And even if they weren't extremely wrestling centric, you gotta get one just to get people used to it, seeing him in movies, and then it's like, okay, now we go. You know,
yeah, because No Holds Barred compared to, like, Suburban Commando is, like, is far more watchable.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, oh, if we actually, like, leaned into this more, because that's all I felt. The movie starts Blue Hawaii, that is,
Blue Hawaii
starts with Elvis's girlfriend rushing to the airport to pick up her boyfriend, and she gets
Chad
to the tar-
Gates.
Yeah, Chad Gates. She gets to the runway, and she's standing there next to, like, the local Hawaiian woman that hands out the leis as people come to Hawaii, and they're talking about how wonderful it is that Chadwick is going to be home.
Chadwick.
And the door opens, and Elvis is just straight up making out with an airline assistant. And I'm like, oh. And then he comes down, and she's mad. And Elvis just looks at her and goes, oh, I was just doing it to get a rise from you. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, oh, this is the movie we're watching?
Yep.
Yes, please.
Here's the thing. So throughout the movie, this happens.
Yes.
This is basically all I kept thinking while watching this is – is basically the character continues to tell his girlfriend over and over again, oh, come on, honey. I was just making out with some other girl for the 14th time in front of you.
Yeah, right.
I'm just cheating on you the whole movie. Want to get married?
Yeah. Look, here's the deal. We'll just get married. And I won't continue to do this.
I won't jokingly keep making out with women.
Yeah, I'm just
because it's a hoot.
I'm sexy, and I think it's funny that you get mad.
So
why? I'm Elvis.
I'm Elvis. And speaking, I'm Elvis. There's a little. So if you pump up the volume in that scene that we're talking about, the very opening scene at the airport, you can't not hear the crowd of people screaming because there was a crowd watching them film this.
Yeah.
And like watching these movies. Yeah, you can get lost in the fact that it's a cheeseball 60s movie starring Elvis Presley. But when you actually put into your head that he is the biggest thing on earth at this moment, it makes it so much fun to rewatch these movies and watch the extras.
Yeah, because they can't keep... I noticed it too.
They when can't they're on keep the their beach, eyes off of him.
Yeah, and it's crazy because it's tough, like especially
singing the whole fucking time. So he's literally Elvis doing Elvis, and he's the biggest fucking thing in the world, and you're being paid to sit on a beach in Hawaii and watch Elvis do Elvis, and it's like, holy shit. Like, the one... Yes. My favorite Elvis movie is Viva Las Vegas. A lot of it has to do with the chemistry that Elvis and Ann Marker had. Like, those two, like... That I think is the pinnacle of Elvis movies in my fucking opinion.
Sure. And
someday we
it's
will.
It's gotta get be hard to top it. This, but go
well,
on.
Well, someday we will. And I was thinking that during this, I'm like, oh, this is the music's really good, but I really wish we did that. And someday we'll get around to doing Viva Las Vegas. Maybe I have a Vegas trip next year. Maybe we'll book it for that week. But there's a scene where Elvis is singing to Ann Margaret, and it's completely, you know, it's a completely realistic scene. So
clearly.
She comes out of a cabana after changing into her bathing suit. He's in a full suit, and he's got a guitar. And he's singing to this woman, walking away from him, playing Hard to Get. And it goes around a pool and up a diving board, and he gets pushed in the pool. Of course, this would completely happen at a Vegas hotel.
Yeah.
Watching the extras.
Yeah.
Every woman at the pool is just gawking at him. Like... Again, we talked earlier on the show about you and I and our acting experience, and a lot of that has to do with being extras in movies and stuff like that. And there's a lot of fucking rules. And again, it was a different time, and these were different movies. And continuity and giving a shit didn't matter because Elvis Presley was on your fucking screen.
Yeah.
So there wasn't like, you know, like as a, like I had an experience years ago. I was an extra in a movie, and I got spoken to for leering too hard at a scene. I thought I was doing the right thing. Like I was playing a parent at a children's play, and all of a sudden some other parents start brawling and I looked at it.
Yeah, sure.
And they're like, don't look at them. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like if I'm a parent at a play, like I'm like, I'm not going to argue with you, but come on, that's ludicrous. These guys are rolling around in a school play. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, I was spoken to for looking at them, for reacting to it. In these movies, everyone is just glued to this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Glued to him. Like, and it's a weird thing. Like you said about Hulk Hogan. And while, yes, there could have been the similarities, because I think the 80s were still cheesy enough.
Right.
That we could have got away with it, but we were getting into that realm of like Schwarzenegger movies and stuff, where like the 60s were a wildly different time. So they could get away, and these movies did make money. These were financially, critically panned, obviously, but they made money, and they made money because they had Elvis Presley in them. I had a quote from a producer where he basically said, I don't have it in front of me right now, but he basically said that. He basically said they're formulaic, they're based around the music, but they make money.
Yeah.
Putting Elvis Presley... For. In your movie, you are guaranteed a hit.
Yeah.
And that's why he made damn near, like I said, 33 movies. And let me see. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. Yeah. 27 of the 33 movies were made in the 60s.
Yeah.
So in a 10-year span, he made 27 of 33 movies. And the ones before that were also, like, they're heralded movies. King Creole, Jailhouse Rock, which is probably his most popular. Loving You and Love Me Tender. But pretty much every movie he made was made for the music.
Right.
And this is one of the more egregious movies where it's like they're not even trying. Like Angela Lansbury is dialed up to 15 on this fucking movie.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
And she's just like, "Look, I got 30 seconds of screen time in between a song. I'm going for it."
Right. Well, I think that's kind of it. Is like if Elvis Presley tried to act a la like Vanilla Ice is in As Cool as Ice,
which
you
is
know what I mean?
We'll do someday.
At some point, we'll do that. Or like, you know, Michael Jordan in Michael Jordan in Space Jam. You know, like they were trying to do too much. Like they were trying to like really act,
right.
And it's just like, oh no, we knew exactly what we were doing with Elvis. We're going to do a little bit of acting, and he's charismatic enough to carry the 5 minutes to the next song.
Right.
And then he's going to sing, and that's what you're here for.
Right.
If imagine like, and here's the thing. I didn't know that it was a musical, right? Like I didn't and I use musical in like a very loose term, but I didn't realize that he would be singing. Right. I thought that he was actually like, this was one of those things where it was just like, I'm Elvis. I'm going to start acting and everybody's going to tell me that I'm awesome. Yeah. And I'm going to do 50 of these movies and they're all garbage. And everybody laughs at Elvis,
right.
But he keeps doing it because everybody in his immediate circle tells him how wonderful he is.
Sure.
That's what I thought we were getting. Mm-hmm. And instead it was just like, oh no, I'm watching Elvis just be captivating to watch because yep. He's Elvis and so charismatic.
Yep.
And then he's going to sing, which he's good at. Yep. And I like listening to, and then we just rinse, wash and repeat until they get married at the end.
Yep.
The end of this movie was wild.
Oh my God. It was like, I didn't want to text you through this movie because I knew you were going to have a lot of thoughts on it. I didn't want to have those thoughts. I wanted to do it now in the show.
Sure.
But maybe the least convincing drowning ever.
Oh, yeah. So basically,
she was the conflict, by the way.
Yeah.
So like in other movies, like I mentioned, Viva Las Vegas, the conflict was he needed $500 to get a motor so he could win his race car race. Because in that one, he was a race car driver.
Sure, of course.
But in this one, it was he was a tour guide instructor. He was a tour guide.
So his parents want him to take over the pineapple farm.
I don't know where Angela Lansbury thinks she is hailing from in this. Her name is Sarah Lee, like the cake.
So I paid attention to this.
Wouldn't stop
detail.
Saying it.
Yeah. Basically, they're from Atlanta originally. Ah, right. And that's how they explain away Elvis's accent.
Sure.
Just that is basically so they moved to Hawaii to like run this thing, but his parents at least are originally from Atlanta.
The Great Southern Hawaiian Fruit Company.
Yes. And so they sell fruit. And so basically the conflict part of the conflict is that his parents want him to just take over the family business. Come to work for me and you'll be great. But basically Elvis is like, no, I have to do it on my own.
Well, that's another Elvis movie trope. He has to be the common man. He's every man, even though he's the goddamn king of rock and roll and looks every the part.
Yes, 100%. Because that's the thing. Is like, I don't want people to look at me and be the boss's son.
I'm just a minimum wage kid, baby. I just work for a living over here. It's like, no, you're not. Look at your hair.
No, you're not, Elvis. Also,
this base is not minimum wage.
Yeah. Wildly racist servant.
Ping pong.
It's just the name. So the fact that they have some Asian man's name Ping Pong. So there's that. But Elvis then wants to work with his girlfriend as a travel instructor, and he's basically showing
a tour guide of Hawaii.
Yeah. a tour guide of Hawaii. And apparently this is the start of tourism in Hawaii. Like,
people... I know all the parts on the island. Let me take you to my dad's fucking pineapple plant.
Yeah. And that was one of the best things. It's just like, look, they pick all the pineapples over there. And it's just like, okay, how do they do it? They just stick a hand in and pick it out. Here, come over and let's get some fresh cut pineapple from this very, very big shack right here. It's just like, what?
And
so he's basically charged with taking this lady and her four students around the island. On like four
female students.
Yeah, they're all female. All five of them females.
Because, look.
Or all four of them.
You know what this is.
Yeah.
Elvis is going to sing every 2 minutes. We need attractive women to just ogle him.
Yeah. And so everybody's fine, except for this one girl who is just a brat.
Yep.
Just an absolute brat the entire time. Well,
she's the conflict in the movie. We need one small but easily beatable conflict. Yeah, overcome. Yeah.
And her whole thing is that she just basically, she wants Elvis, because who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? And
what she didn't know is she's 17 years old. You know, he likes his brides more around 15 years old.
Yeah, sure. He didn't know that.
I think Priscilla was 15, 16 years old when they got together.
Probably.
I think that's widely publicized.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Yeah, different time. but that's part of the thing. The entire time he's together, he's like, no, you're a child.
The royals are weird, okay? He was the king, so the royals are fucking weird.
They're weird.
I think we've established that over the last week or so.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, he's his whole thing is just like, no, you're a child. I can't. Like, that's basically
But that also led to one of my favorite things that I forgot was in this. We got a fucking Elvis karate bar fight.
Yes. That was
he did the move.
I lost my shit. And I was just like, I hope this is in every single Elvis movie ever. Basically, somebody
bust out my shit, man. Yeah.
Some guy who's like just a drunk tourist starts hitting on this girl. She likes the attention. He keeps trying to get this drunk old man away from her because he's like, hey, man, she's a kid. And then basically one of my favorite things in the world, because it's just so wildly unrealistic, is that moment, in a bar or food fight where two people start tussling. Yep. So everybody just starts punching the person to their right. Like,
everybody hit something.
Yeah, just all of a sudden, these two men start tussling. Yeah. And everybody in the bar just starts brawling. And it's just like, I don't know why those two people in the back that were at the same table have decided to just start doing fisticuffs. Like, I don't understand.
Look, them's are the rules.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's the same thing in a food fight where it's like, if you're in a cafeteria at a school and two people at a table, like three tables down, starts like throwing food at each other, you're not all of a sudden going to pick up your mashed potatoes and fucking huck it at your friend.
I was genuinely hungry when we came in here.
Yeah, right. Like, what are we doing here?
Fuck you. I'm finishing my coffee.
Yeah, you know? So Elvis gets arrested because he's an everyman.
Because we need to have the Poppy Blues song in there.
Yeah, that's right. Because he needs to go to jail and sing.
Where is it? So, I have to find it because that's actually referenced in one of the formula points of the movies.
Oh, really? He goes to jail at some point? Yeah.
Yep. Hang on. I'll find it in a second. Keep going.
Okay. But yeah, so him and his girlfriend decided that they're going to finish the tour for the girls and start their own tourism company is basically what they're going to do.
Well, he gets fired because of the arrest.
The fight. Yeah.
He gets fired because of the arrest.
And his girlfriend quits because she fired him.
Mm-hmm.
Or because the boss fired him. Okay. And so basically, because it's just an Elvis movie, in the middle of the night, every single goddamn woman in this movie comes to see Elvis in his hotel room alone in the middle of the night. They all want this guy. And the girl that is been the girl that's been the problem the whole time takes off in a Jeep and just
that was the best example of Barbie's first Jeep ever. Did you see how pink that shit was?
Oh yeah. Oh, it was like, where did you get this Jeep? Like, where did you find this? How did you find the keys? Did you hotwire it? I have so many questions. But she just drives to the beach and decides that she's just going to throw herself into the ocean and drown herself. And it's just like, oh, you're terrible at this.
Okay, here it is. The formula for the music in Elvis movies. Sure. We need three ballads. We need one medium tempo number, one up tempo number, and one break blues boogie.
Okay.
That was a jail song, the break blues boogie, because he had the guy with the harmonica who's crying in the other jail cell. Also, all of these people that got arrested were allowed to keep their instruments.
Yes, they were. All of them.
The Hawaiians that were with him were basically his backup dancers and band.
Yeah, it was his band, backup dancers, and best friends.
And waiters.
Yeah.
It was so good. Like, there was the party his mother threw, Angela Lansbury, and before the shit even gets started, he just shows up, grabs two maracas, and everyone busts out into synchronized dancing and just dances their asses right on out the door. And Angela Lansbury, basically speaking for the audience, goes, "What was that?" Yeah, right. That's the sound of the young, hun. Get used to it. They're Elvis. Fucking Elvis.
Elvis.
Baby. Elvis he baby. Shows up, takes over, and the party leaves with him.
Yeah, and Elvis just goes in and pulls this chick out of the ocean.
Yep.
And
very
then
aggressively. She very did not want to come out. She was having a swim.
Yeah. And then basically he's just like, "Look, you need to stop being a brat." And she's just like, "My parents don't love me." He's just like, "That's too bad.
It's too fucking bad, man. You gotta stop it. We only got 10 minutes left in the movie. I gotta get married and sing two more songs."
And so then the next scene, she's just fine.
Well, cut to, they're all having some lunch or some shit on the beach, and she, for the first time in the movie, is smiling and having a good time. Like, she got over her suicidal depressions instantly.
Oh, yeah. That's because Elvis straight up takes this child over his knee and just spanks her. And it's just like, because that's what happens. He pulls her out, and he's just like, "What is your problem?" And she's just like, "My parents don't love me." He's like, "You need an attitude adjustment." She's like, "I fucking do." And he's like, "All right, I'm the king." And he's just like, "Oh." And so then, they're at brunch the next day, and they're all sitting there talking. And the school teacher is just like, "Oh, man, hey, so lady, your cheeks are red." And she's like, "Not my face." And it's just like, "Are you for real? What is happening?"
Well, this is the big climactic finish, because all the while, the school teacher has been flirting heavily with Elvis.
Yes.
And his girlfriend has been noticed and has been noticeably jealous the whole time, while also playing hard to get. So at this brunch, his girlfriend is there for some reason, and she's sitting next to the school teacher, who she caught with Elvis in his room the night before. But little does she know that the school teacher was actually with Elvis's friend, who also is a manager at the pineapple factory. And the and his girlfriend gets all pissed off and takes off. He's like, "Hey, where the fuck are you going, baby?" And he's the only one mad at the table. Everyone else is laughing it up and having a good time because they're sitting at brunch with Elvis. That's all I kept thinking, is like, these people aren't acting. They're just fucking giddy to be sitting in front of the greatest thing at that time.
Right.
And so he gets up and chases after him. He's like, "Look, woman."
We got five
more minutes in this fucking movie, and I'm gonna make you marry me.
I love that he's just like, "Look, we're gonna be what was his last name?
Gates."
Oh yeah, he was like,
"Gates Hawaii.
We're gonna be Gates of Hawaii." And she's like, "But my name isn't Gates." And he's just like, "You dummy."
he literally connects all the dots in a sentence. He's like, "Look, my name is Gates, and I don't know if you know that, but it's plural. And if you didn't know that, it's a goddamn proposal, and I didn't want to do it romantically. You're gonna say yes anyway. I'm fucking Elvis. Want a ring? All right."
We're gonna get married. My dad's over there. He's calling my mom. My mom's gonna get over here, and we're doing this wedding in 20 minutes.
There is a barge that floats from one part of a resort to another. We're gonna sing the whole way.
And we're just gonna make everybody that has attended this wedding, including the tour group that I'm pretty sure is still paying me, they're gonna walk right beside this barge. That's what we're doing.
And that's
wedding,
the end.
And this wedding is going to take place 15 minutes from now. I hope you have a dress.
That's the end.
And that's the end of this movie. Literally.
And also, one of the things I loved about these movies, no end credits.
No, because
we did the crew.
We did them in the beginning. That was it.
We have a little bit of an extended opening credit, but even that, not too fucking long. Yeah. But like the end, Paramount logo,
black.
Done.
Black. We're out. Oh, man. I loved it.
Money.
I love this movie. This was a damn near perfect movie because, again, it didn't have to be like Oscar worthy,
right.
Very well acted, well shot. No. I just needed to watch Elvis be Elvis for about an hour and a half, and it was fun.
Well, and that's the thing. And like when you look at these movies, you know exactly how they're being sold because Elvis's name is as big, if not bigger, than the title of the movie. Nobody gives a shit what is in the movie. They're just going to see Elvis. He is God in this time. In 1960, right. He is fucking everything to people.
Everything. Oh,
and
great.
He prints money. Like, it's amazing. And there's shit. Like, they, like, so, hang on, I had it again. Let me get back there. So, yeah, of course, all of his movies were pretty much critically panned. And one critic, Andrew Kane, dismissed all 27 of his 1960s movies as the pantheon of bad taste.
Sure.
Look, guy.
To that I say, do you hate fun?
Look, guy. You knew what you were getting into.
Right.
What the like, this is not going to be The Godfather here.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is a movie that's sold on a singer singing songs. You got that. You know what I mean? Like, I know you haven't watched it yet. But Coming to America's sequel came out week before, something like that. On Amazon. And the reviews have been all over the place. And the ones I love are people shitting on it, saying it doesn't live up to the original. And to that I say, no shit. The original is one of the most iconic comedies of all time. This, if you went in with accurate expectations, which is this is a 30-year past comedy of one of the most iconic comedies of all time, and you just sat down and said, all right, let's have some fun. Let's like, again, this is Coming to America 2, like, not The Godfather. We don't need a lot of story here. Just make me laugh a few times and make me point at the screen and go, I remember that. And they succeeded for an hour and 40 minutes.
Yep.
I say go watch that movie and go watch fucking Blue Hawaii.
Oh, definitely go watch Blue Hawaii. It's on Paramount Plus.
If you, it's also on Amazon Prime as well.
And Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
But just watch it.
Yeah. And the nice thing, I started looking through and like a lot of his, only a few are on Paramount Plus. A lot of his movies are on Amazon Prime. Viva Las Vegas is on HBO Max. And yeah, so that you can find almost all 33 of Elvis's films on streaming services that you probably pay for. So go watch those. If you like fun, something light, something you don't have to really invest in or think about.
Sure.
You know, and also something that doesn't take 6 fucking hours like what we're going to do next week.
I know.
Go watch Elvis movies because this week
we're going to be a fun 6 hours, like trying to watch Endgame and Infinity War in one sitting.
You know, or the Irishman once. But that was fun once. So coming up next week on that's Blue Hawaii, right?
Yeah, that's Blue Hawaii.
All right, that's Blue Hawaii.
I can't tell you I like this movie more. I just, I'm out. It's out of things. Wonderful.
Go watch it. And,
Elvis spanked a child and we didn't care.
We didn't care because he was so goddamn charming.
Yeah.
And the hair, man. Fucking hair.
And the hair.
And the hair. So next week on that movie show, we're doing a compare and contrast. Well, we've only done one of these, I believe. Ocean's 11?
Yes, we've only done one of these.
Ocean's 11, which was a wildly different compare and contrast.
Because it wasn't the literal same movie?
Right, exactly. Just 2 hours plus more of it. So this week we're going to be doing...
and in Instagram squares.
Yes, it's going to be formatted terribly. But you know what? The advanced critics seem to love it. It's got a 74 rating on Rotten Tomatoes, even though it's not fucking out yet. Yep, thank you. Yeah, Justice League. We're going to do the Whedon cut, I guess it's being called, and the Snyder cut. And the Snyder cut. We're doing
the
both
Whedon cut and the Snyder cut, yeah.
Yeah, Whedon cut, theatrical cut, the original cut, the bastard cut. I don't know what the fuck they're calling it. The digital mustache remover cut.
The usurper cut.
The properly formatted cut. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we're watching Justice League theatrical and Justice League Snyder cut. And we will be reporting back to you after 6 hours. I anticipate nothing less than the last time we did 6 hours of a movie, which was the TV miniseries The Shining.
It's going to be exactly like that.
Yeah. So strap in, folks.
Strap in.
Mike and Eddie are going to be a little angry next week.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on that movie show for Blue Hawaii. And you can follow Eddie and myself on social media at Mike Wendt, at The Eddie McCabe. Eddie, what's going on the TikTok?
Yeah, we just celebrated a year, actually. Mm-hmm. Yep. We just passed a year, and we're going strong. We're just doing stuff.
Congratulations. Saw your little risky business there.
Yeah, that was
your 1 year
I
when you
posted.
Well, we thought we only had 2 weeks of this.
Yeah, we only thought we had 2 weeks of this, so I did that. I have to redo that. That was one thing that everybody was telling me. It was just like, oh, you got to redo that now. And I'm like, oh, I do, but I need props.
What props?
Oh, you'll see.
Oh, Jesus. All right. So follow Eddie on social media at The Eddie McCabe and on his TikTok. And you can follow the show on Facebook, facebook.com/thatmovieshowtv. The website is thatmovieshow.net. We are on any and all podcasting apps.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week for 6 hours of Justice League. All right.
Bye, everybody.
It's Boomy Valley, Boomy Hollywood, where any office boy or young mechanic can be.